So sex is penetration, or penetration is sex, is really based on this dick-centric, male-centric script that is so outdated. That is based on sex being defined by procreation, so creating a baby.
Sex is not just penetration. I've known this for a while, and it's a beautiful concept, right? That sex is not just a penis inside a vagina. It includes mutual masturbation, oral sex, erotic massage, and all sorts of shit that I'm not familiar with. But the activities that fall under the umbrella of sex are deep and vast and broad. There's a lot more to sex than just penetration. And that is one of many things that Todd Barrett and I are exploring today. Todd is a psychotherapist who deals a lot with sex and relationships. He is also the man behind the Instagram account, Your Diagnonsense. Diagnosis, nonsense, Diagnonsense. And we're diving in today about pornography, some myths around sexuality, how to broaden our understanding of sex, and a lot more. And I am pumped for this episode. My name is Sean Galanos, and this is The Love Drive. All right, let's get started.
Sure.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Todd, could you please introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Todd. I am a sex and relationship therapist. I'm based in New York City. I have a private practice, which is now consisting of my couch in my apartment and a computer screen. I've been doing that for almost a decade. And yeah, I'm gay, from Boston, single, unfortunately. What else? I think that does it.
Where do you want to start?
Something that I was writing about recently, and I posted about recently, and I posted about before, but mostly just talking about the language that we use and what that implies about the cultural scripts, that being how we understand sex and ourselves and the language we use to describe our sexualities and the gender, the limitations of those gendered scripts. So one of them was penetration of sex, which is something that I daily with my clients come across, and with my friends whenever we talk about sex. You know, it's still part of our a dialogue that's been labeled normative, that being sex equals penetration. And at the end of the day, it's just words, and, you know, there are a ton of words that are problematic, and it can be a challenging thing to target all of them. But when it comes to sex, language really matters, because it implies a lot of history, and that history implies a lot of meaning, and that meaning can either equal some kind of shame, preoccupation, et cetera, and that's going to directly impact how you experience your body, pleasure, et cetera. Yeah, so I was writing about penetration and really trying to encourage people to get out of that script that sex is penetration. Because for so many people, especially cis women, penetration is not the road to pleasure. And sometimes it's often pain. And most cis women aren't reaching orgasm through penetration itself. So sex is penetration, or penetration is sex, is really based on this dick-centric, male-centric script that is so outdated. You know, that is based on sex being defined by procreation, so creating a baby, which is, you know, not the story that many of us are living by and having sex for. And so that's why it's really important that we look at what the language implies about our history, and really see if it even applies anymore to our present, which it doesn't.
So I love this conversation, and I want to make it more real, because I think you and I can both agree that for a lot of people, saying I had sex last night means I was penetrated by a penis, or I penetrated somebody with my penis. There was penis in vagina happened, which you and I both know is very limiting, because sex for me itself is like two people coming together for the purposes of sexual pleasure.
Right.
I guess that's how I would describe it just off the top of my head. And that doesn't necessarily mean that there was any penetration. And for so long, like I would talk to my friends and I would say, oh, did you guys have sex last night? They're like, they would go, no, you know, she gave me a blowjob and then I went down on her and then I fingered her and then it was over. And I was like, well, that sounds like sex to me.
Right.
That sounds like two people getting sexual, like getting naked and playing with each other. And so for me, the umbrella of sex is just like people coming together and like being sexual together, like consensually.
100%. All the time, you know, it didn't count. We didn't fuck, blah, blah, blah. And it's a challenge for a lot of people because then they feel pressure to have penetrative sex, even if they don't want it, because that's the kind of ultimate, elevated, idealized version of what sex means for people. So this is when it can get problematic is that, you know, one, not everybody wants to have sex. I mean, penetrative sex. See, I just did it. And that's the challenge with some of these scripts is that, you know, there's so much internalized and a big part of us that, you know, I know all this stuff and I still kind of slip back into it.
Yeah.
And that's how ingrained some of these values around what sex is.
Yeah, it's also very limiting to say that sex is this, right? And then that it, like you just said, it didn't count. But, you know, in my head and in my heart, when we have sex of any kind, it changes the nature of the relationship. It can affect it. And then, you know, people can develop feelings and emotions. And obviously you can have that without sex. But to say that only penetrative sex will get you more feeling more connected and attached is wrong. Like you could just fondle somebody or make out with them and you could still develop deeper emotions.
Exactly. And, you know, the other challenging thing here is that there's so many people that they say, well, I don't enjoy oral sex or I don't enjoy these other parts of sex. And then so therefore, all of this pressure gets put on penetration. And, you know, just like, you know, if we're going to invest in our investments, you know, you want to have a diverse portfolio of investments. Sex is the same thing. You know, we want to be able to enjoy a wide range of different sexual activity and, you know, to really derive a sense of pleasure, really experience connectedness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when we elevate one sexual act over another, it definitionally changes the experience emotionally. And so, you know, that really does bring up a lot of challenges for people who don't enjoy penetrative sex or can't get off through penetration, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And or somebody gets a fissure and they can't have anal sex or something's happening where they just cannot penetrate their partner because these things do happen. And then there's no sex to be had.
Yeah, or we say like, yeah, we can't have sex because there's some sort of, you know, physiological barrier or block to having sex. When the reality is that you can, like you said, have a very diverse portfolio of lots of sexual activities and sexually pleasurable sensations and activities that you can do together that can contribute to a healthy sex life.
Yeah.
And there are people that don't like penetration, like you said. And that doesn't mean that just because you don't like it or have penetration in your sex life, that you don't have a sex life.
100%. And like, I have never encountered somebody who's not said something that is not expressed a challenge they've experienced either as a penetrative partner or as a receptive partner. And not necessarily a physiological challenge, that's definitely there, but also emotionally, whether it's pressure or confusion or a disinterest or some kind of challenge within the context of a relationship. So it's kind of a huge issue. And it's really helpful to really unpack where that comes from and to work on changing some of that stuff. Even the word foreplay, you know, that implies that foreplay isn't sex, that it's these are the activities you're doing before you have sex, which for many people, it's just not the case.
Their foreplay is the sex.
Right. That sex, penetrative sex, would be post-play for a lot of people.
Mm. So how do we start? I mean, obviously, we're doing our part by having this conversation, and I'm guessing that a lot of the people that are listening to these episodes, you know, my podcast, your podcast, are kind of hip to some of this, these concepts that we're talking about, but how else do we do our part?
Well, it's really just individual. Everybody, you know, I think at some point is going to reflect upon the sexual values that they have and figure out what they want to keep and what they want to get rid of. And I think this is one for people to think about in terms of recognizing the language that they use to describe their body parts, the language they want their partner to use, the words that they want to use to describe sexual acts, where in their body they want to be touched. So, you know, it's a real process that unfortunately doesn't happen usually until like mid-20s, sometimes late 30s, or 30s or mid-30s for people, because we start off learning about our bodies and sex from this kind of shameful, repressive place. So it takes some time and some real intentional effort to unlearn some of these myths. I mean, another myth is, you know, we have to come at the same time. And these are pressures that I even experience when I'm having sex. And I, you know, I'm a sex therapist. It's because we've just internalized the ways in which we see porn and sex being enacted culturally and really think that that's what everybody wants and that's how you do sex. But it's not, you know, it's not a planned orchestra where, you know, you can come at the same time all the time. And there's also a thing where people just don't want to touch themselves, that they think that they should just be able to get off because their partner is touching them. And it's just like, no. Sometimes you need to jerk off or grab a vibrator at the end. You know, so there's a lot of different things that I think everybody experiences because no one was taught any congruent information about what sexuality really is. And it's just important to think about what those myths are because everybody may have different ones.
Okay, so many things. First of all, coming at the same time, that's a lot of pressure.
I know.
It's like sometimes just coming is a lot of pressure for one person. Now we have to synchronize it and choreograph it. And, you know, it's again, it feels limiting that it's not successful unless we both come at the same time. I will say, coming at the same time, kind of nice. When it happens, kind of nice. And at the same time, I would prefer to be present for my partner's orgasm. Because when I'm also coming, I'm less present. Like, I'm present to the sensations in my body, but I'm less present to what's happening for my partner. I really like to, I enjoy watching my partner orgasm. So when we're coming at the same time, I can't really do that because I'm sort of lost in my own pleasure.
Well, what you bring up is important is that, you know, there isn't like the best way to have sex or come.
Ooh.
But I think coming at the same time has really been one of those other things that have been elevated to, you know, we're going to have good sex. That's what happens. When it's not, as you're saying, you know, it's hot if you come at the same time, but it's also hot if you can watch your partner come and if you come before them. Or if you are able to receive pleasure and touch from your partner while you're getting yourself off. So there's not one right way or one most pleasurable way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there are these myths like coming at the same time that really do impact the way people experience their bodies. You know, I was talking to a client earlier and, you know, I always ask, you know, if I was a fly in the wall, what would I see, et cetera. And part of the story I received got from them, which I usually get is, well, at first I said, it's okay, I don't need to come, you know, because there's too much pressure wrapped up in coming at a certain time. And that's an experience that many people have.
Which also brings up the idea that like you can also have a good sex life and not orgasm.
Right, which is what I was going to say. It's not like you need to come. But in terms of just talking about orgasms, there's a lot of pressure on them to have them, have them at a certain time, to have them at a certain intensity, your guy to come a lot, to shoot really far. I mean, it's like, it's crazy when you think about it. And where does all this shit come from? It comes from porn.
Yeah, I don't come a lot, nor can I shoot very far.
It's a thing.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess.
Especially for gay guys. I don't know.
Is it? It's like, if you don't come far, then you're like a weak man or something.
Yeah, guys are always like talking about how far they shoot. And it's like, what is this, a gun? Like, what are you talking about? But it's a thing, because in porn, that's like...
Yeah. You want a voluminous...
It's just women, you know, and they get a dick put inside and they're screaming. And it's like, no, that's just not really how it goes. So, you know, and this is about porn. It comes from porn.
So one thing that I wanted to touch on before if we do go into porn, you mentioned briefly that we don't really know, like, you know, I asked you, how do we start to unpack this stuff and how do we start to heal some of this stuff? And you kind of touched on this idea of like, we kind of need to talk about it, you know, and you mentioned, you know, what do you call my genitals, or how do we talk about this, and how language is important. And there's a tool that I've been using a lot in my relationship and also in my work and in the workshops that I do called the yes, no, maybe list. And I will link to it in the show notes. There's this one in particular by this company called AutoStraddle. And there's a whole bunch of parts to the list. And one section is what I want to do. And there's all these different activities, right? Like hands, strap-ons, tickling, fisting, dildos, all, I mean, it's just like, there's like three pages of it. And you can say, this is what I like to give and this is what I like to receive, right? Because both activities, you can either give or receive them. And it's a really beautiful tool that you can use with your partner. And I mean, you can actually do this on your own so that you can start to get more curious about what feels good to you, or what might feel good to you, or what you're interested in trying at some point, or what is like a fucking huge no. Like you wouldn't, like I will never hear what's reading erotica alone. I'm like, I'm a maybe on that, you know, but then it says anal fisting. Like I'm probably a no on anal fisting, you know, but I wouldn't have known that unless I had gone through this list. So this is level one. There's this like, what do I want to do stuff? And then this other one that I really loved is the language that we're going to use. So it's called what we're going to say. Please refer to my gender as, please refer to my genitals as, it's acceptable to refer to my gender as, please never refer to my genitals as, like, just don't call my penis a pee-pee, because I'll never be turned on by that. And then also things like, when I want you to stop, I will say, when I want you to keep going, I will say, and when I want to check in with you, I will say. And these are such beautiful tools.
Yeah. I mean, it's especially important for queer folks who don't necessarily feel the connection to their genitals in the way that someone else may want to label them. So it's especially important for queer folks, trans folks, but obviously for anybody, to really develop the language to one feel comfortable saying the words, you know, whatever they may be, dick, cock, ass, pussy, whatever. Because I think a lot of people are even just uncomfortable to say them. Yeah. So really developing the comfort level with yourself, and then really pushing yourself to share the preference, the word preferences that you have with your partner.
Yeah. When you want me to stop, hearing the following makes sense to me.
Yes. But you bring up something I just want to say is that, you know, and this is why I like working with sex, is that a single piece of information can really change your entire sex life. And that's not dramatic at all. It's real. Whereas, you know, with ongoing trauma or depression or other issues, not saying I don't say I love working, but I'm very interested in working with them as well. But it's a much different process. But it's something to just keep in mind for people that are listening, if they do want to think about their sexuality, is that it's, yes, it's hard work, but if you put in work, you can actually get really far with just even a single piece of information, like telling your partner, I like the word dick instead of cock, or pussy instead of vagina, you know. Mm-hmm. That it can even, not to, again, it's not dramatic, that these things can really actually make a big difference.
It sounds benign, right? Like that you can make the distinction between dick and cock, but it can have a phenomenal impact on your comfort level and on your arousal, right? Like dick will never turn me on, but cock will.
Yeah.
And so I guess it makes sense for us to start to figure out, you know, how can we bring more arousal to our life, then also to learn about your partner and what their preferences are and how they want to be communicated with or to. And, you know, I've been working with sex for a long time and I'd never done these exercises. Like I'd never done this. And when my partner...
No one encourages you to.
Well, I didn't even know they existed.
There's no education.
Yeah, there's no education. Yeah.
And basically what we're talking about is just being curious. And that's the challenge, is that when we were little, most of our sexual curiosities were forbidden, shamed, discouraged, or just not talking and therefore implicitly discouraged.
Yeah.
And so that really creates challenges for us as we continue to grow and develop sexually and as we're adults, in terms of showing ourselves curiosity about our own sexuality and erotic lives and showing our partners curiosity about theirs.
I'm curious why there's so much shame around talking about sex, number one, and then number two, just our sexuality in general.
I mean, well, that's a history lesson. I mean, it's historical, it's cultural, it's not biological, the shame.
It's not.
We learn how not to be curious. We learn how not to ask questions about our partners and ourselves, just like we learn that sex is penetrative and not oral. That this is all learned stuff, and for everybody, the story is different and the same also. Whether it's religion, school, or a lack of information or presence at home, you know, the first thing we usually learn about sex is not to talk about it, or to do so never. I was going to say in private, but no, that's not even a thing. And so, you know, this is how things unfold. It's just like any other experience we have about ourselves, like self-confidence or self-esteem, is that we learn how to feel these things. We don't just kind of out of nowhere start developing feelings.
Right.
We respond to our environment.
Right.
And sex is no different. It's not just this biological thing.
Okay. So should we move on to other myths?
Sure.
Do you have any off the top of your head?
Well, the coming thing is always one that makes me laugh.
Oh, good. I think we need to laugh right now.
Yeah. Also, the like, I don't want to touch myself thing.
Oh, during sex?
Yeah. That a lot of people, regardless of gender, expect their bodies to just feel pleasure with someone else touching them. And for a lot of people, that's just not how it happens. And so it can be a challenge for them to stop their partner and say, oh, let me do it, or let me show you what I do.
Well, yeah, it's a challenge because, well, there's multiple layers to it. One of them is having the language, right, to even just say that in a way that, you know, doesn't belittle or demean your partner. Then there's the fear of not wanting to upset or hurt the feelings of the other person, which is, it's kind of connected. And then it feels like there's maybe the shame of having to do it yourself and what that might mean. My God, there's so many layers to that.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers, but these are the myths that, you know, are perpetuated everywhere and no one talks about it.
I had always wanted partners that were comfortable touching themselves while I was also doing something to them, whether oral sex or penetration, or that it was like more collaborative than just like me trying to get them off.
Yeah, which is fun when there's a back and forth where someone's invested in their own body, that can be arousing.
Yeah, I've never actually had that conversation before.
Which?
The one about like wanting to incorporate both of us touching each other at the same time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's where mutual masturbation comes in, which I'm also, it's not necessarily a myth, but it's something I'm always surprised about, is that it's rare that I hear a couple when I'm seeing them tell me that they do that, that they masturbate together.
Mm.
Regardless of sexual orientation, gender, or any other of those variables, most people aren't masturbating with their partner, which is always a shocker to me because it's just like such an effective way to experience pleasure without pressure, especially, you know, if you don't have time, it can be quick too. It's such easy access, but most people don't do it.
Oh, it's kind of mind-blowing, actually, this idea that, well, yeah, this both the idea that people don't do this and the idea that it's the totally valid way for both of you to get pleasure in a really short amount of time.
Exactly. And I mean, I guess now we have more time than ever, but I mean, before, when people were super busy, it's a really great way to have sex.
Well, some people are still super busy. They're like working from home and they have kids at home. So
true, Joe.
Yeah. You know, guys like us stuck at home with our dog might have more time than others and maybe less stress. I think I would be really stressed out if I was working from home and my partner was working from home and my kids were at home.
Oh, for sure. And that's going to directly impact the desire you're experiencing.
Yeah, I don't think I would. I don't think I would want to be having as much sex as I could be having.
No, well, I think everyone's been experiencing their sexuality differently with all of this, the isolation and quarantine. Some people, they're really experiencing an increase and others a decrease. There's no right way to respond. And oftentimes we may not have control over how our body responds because this is new. Yeah. Everything is uncertain. Some of us may not feel safe, trapped with our partners, kids. It's not necessarily conducive to feel sexy all the time.
And for some people, it is. They're spending more time in bed. They're lounging. They've taking care of themselves. They're, you know, baking sourdough bread, and that can lead to everyone's baking sourdough bread, and that can lead to, you know, feeling sexier and more desired. And so, yeah, you could be having more sex.
Sourdough bread.
Sourdough bread. Yeah.
Watching, that's the key here.
Watching it rise.
You know, I've never liked sourdough bread. It's so popular, but to me, it just tastes sour. I don't know. I'm just not into it.
Have you ever had a really good grilled cheese sandwich with some sourdough bread?
No.
Yeah.
That doesn't count. That's grilled cheese melted on anything. It's going to be good. Put it on cardboard. It'd probably be good.
Right. So you're saying just like a slice of sourdough with nothing on it, or?
Yes. Or in general, I'm just not into it.
We'll make it
if I had a choice, I mean, I would survive off of it if I had to, but.
I hope that it never comes to this, Todd. That would just be so terrible.
That would be terrible. So sourdough is really crucial to sex. The other thing, I'm jumping all over the place. I'm sorry that I'm so scattered.
That's okay.
The other thing that just popped up to me, not because of the bread, but just in terms of myths, is the idea that sex is just sex, you know, that it doesn't matter, it's just sex, that kind of thing, that, you know, I would encourage people to stop saying, thinking, and feeling. Because when you're having sex with somebody, yes, it's you're having sex, whatever kind of sex that may be, but it's a relational exchange. You know, you're not masturbating at home by yourself. That would be just masturbation. You're with somebody else. So that's a relational context. I'm not saying you just entered into a long-term relationship where you can adopt a child and have dogs in a house. But what I am saying is that it becomes a relational emotional experience. And so there's a lot there. And there's, even if you're not feeling emotionally connected, there's something implied with the lack of emotion, right? So how much effort or energy goes into disconnecting emotionally, you know, so it remains a relational experience. However, it's one that's maybe not as defined as a long-term relationship would be by like emotion or intimacy, but it is nonetheless a relational interaction. So, you know, it's such a huge myth that it's, you know, oh, it's just sex. You know, that's not necessarily the case.
Just a couple people, you know, getting some exercise.
Right.
Not true.
No.
Also, this idea, you know, that sex will activate a lot of our old stuff, regardless of whether you want it to or not. To me, it's all connected, right?
Which is why it's relational.
Yeah. Attachment wounds, your old childhood stuff, your inner child, you know, lacking, the fact that daddy wasn't around, like all that stuff can get activated by having sex, even though you don't want it to. You know, you're like, no, this is no strings attached sex. This is super casual. We're just fuck buddies. And it can still come up.
Yeah. And this is, you know, the tradition, this goes back to history and language in terms of what the traditional definition of a relationship is, you know, that it has to involve some kind of mutual reciprocity or understanding of a structure. But any interaction with a person is a relationship. It doesn't necessarily have to be within the context of something long-term.
Hmm. Yeah, I used to have a lot of casual sex and it was fun for a while and then it stopped working.
Yeah, it's a kind of a bummer when that happens, isn't it?
It's a bummer when any like coping mechanism that you lean on stops working. And for me, casual sex stopped working probably like 4 or 5 years ago. And then the cost of having it just wasn't worth the benefit.
No.
Because I would get sort of like, it would sort of compound the negative aspects of it. And also when you have the awareness that it's not going to work anymore, then it makes it really hard to enjoy it.
Yeah, I had the same experience. I was in a very long-term relationship. And then when that ended, I thought I would just go back to the way things were sexually for me when I was much younger. Because I got into the relationship when I was 21. And so before that, I was having tons of sex. I was young and whatever. But then after we broke up, I was like, nope, not so much. Can't go back there.
Yeah, it didn't work, right?
No, I was just like, this is just a crapshoot. And I don't feel like even trying to take that risk sometimes. But then sometimes I do, and it can feel nice. And then other times I'm like, nope, uh-uh.
I think it depends where you're at, right?
Yeah. But that's, you know, it's a relational thing. It's an emotional thing. It's not just a, oh, I'm not into salmon anymore thing, which did recently happen to me, which was confusing. But it's a reaction and a response to something relational and emotional.
So the myth here is that sex is rarely just sex.
Yeah, sex is an emotional experience that involves pleasure and some kind of relational exchange. It's not again, it's not just, you know, me alone in my apartment jerking off. It's someone else is there. And as soon as somebody else enters the picture, it's as soon as that's when the dynamic changes and becomes a relational exchange.
Yeah.
Even if I don't know the person's name, which that's not my story, but some people don't know their partner's names.
There's some sort of contract there.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's unwritten or unspoken, there's going to be an exchange.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
That's just something, I mean, I always talk with my clients about some of this, especially the clients I see that are single and do have casual sex, is they're just very quick to dismiss the meaning that it has in their life.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, there's a lot of meaning there.
Yeah. Hmm. Just trying to think of, I always try to bring everything back to me because I'm self-centered.
Go for it. Aren't we all?
I don't know. I think some people are maybe less so than others.
I know. I'm being sarcastic.
Facetious.
That's the word, yes.
It's the same word, isn't it? Sarcastic is also like a synonym of facetious. But I don't have it. I actually don't have anything to add to that.
Oh, and no anecdotal experiences was...
Yeah, I just didn't have
for
it.
For the casual sex.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine. But it's something, you know, that everybody says, believes, subscribes to, that got to think a bit more creatively about this stuff.
Are there any other myths that come to mind?
I'm sure that there are.
I'm thinking about if we can just like dip into pornography and there's going to be like a ton of myths that come up.
Sure. Well, I mean, pornography is just in itself a myth, right?
That is what sex looks like.
Yeah. You know, it's people are actual act. I mean, granted, they might not be talented actors, but they are acting. And, you know, it's choreographed in a way that we don't get to see. So it's a huge illusion, but that's where people learn about sex and their bodies from. But that's not to say though, that porn is bad. Maybe that's a myth to talk about that I'll probably get shit for, that I always get shit for, that there's this kind of thing that porn is bad, that it's, you know, degrades women, et cetera, et cetera. And there's for sure porn that's bad. You know, I'm not saying that that doesn't exist and that it's not, it's, you know, it's really problematic, and that is for sure, but it's too easy to paint porn with this kind of broad brushstroke that says, you know, porn is bad. Porn is the enemy. If you watch too much porn, you're a porn addict, blah, 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 blah. I should be careful of using the word addict because people
we can talk
are very
about
sensitive to that.
Yeah, we can talk about that one.
I don't even know if I want to talk about that, but you know, porn isn't all bad. So, you know, I think we just have to really use the values that we are tapping into when we say, well, porn is bad. It's not, some porn is bad, just like not all TV is bad, not all social media is bad. That we really have to think more in the gray areas and develop some nuance. And whenever we're not, whenever we do enter this black and white thinking, and I don't care what it is about, I mean, we're not talking about life and death, you know, murder versus, you know, helping someone through compassion. You know, we're talking about things that are highly, highly stigmatized, like porn, sexuality, and it's just fraught with meaning.
Yeah.
So I really would encourage people to use this kind of an internal alert system to recognize when they do this black and white thinking about porn or sex specifically, because it will have a direct impact on how you experience your body. It will.
Mm. So one of the myths is that not all porn is bad?
I don't think so.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I mean, some of them are degrading. There's like poor work conditions for the talent, and then others are done more, I don't know, in better taste. I mean, no, not taste, because taste is subjective. Better work conditions where people aren't being what's the word?
Not exploited.
Exploited. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Also, there's, you know, the way you use the porn. If you're using it the way, okay, I'll just stay personal here. I used porn for a long time to change the way I felt.
Like feeling, like from not feeling painful things?
Yeah.
Like to cope, is that what you
mean? Yeah, it was like a coping mechanism where I would feel bummed about something, or I would have like a loss in my whatever. I would like get rejected via email for like a business thing or even maybe a date, and I would feel bad. And then I would open up a porn site. Then I would get aroused. So I wasn't even aroused when I looked up the site. I just knew that I would. And then I'd look at porn, then I'd masturbate, then I'd orgasm, and then it would sort of change the way I felt. And that's...
Is that bad?
It's not bad. It's not how I wanted to operate.
Okay.
So it worked for a while until it stopped working, until I kind of developed the awareness that I was using pornography to change the way I felt, rather than to just like sit with the disappointment of whatever the news was. at least for a little bit, like, can I pause between the feeling that is uncomfortable and then the me reaching out for a coping mechanism? So it's not bad. And I still do it sometimes, but I like to pause between. And I don't know how that's related to myths at all, but I just felt like I needed to share that.
Well, I mean, it is related to myth, which is that sex should only be something that you do for fun and enjoyment when you're already aroused and in the mood. Not, you know, that it shouldn't be a coping mechanism, that you shouldn't use it to grapple with the uncertainty of life or the challenging experiences, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a huge myth. And porn, while you're masturbating, having sex with your partner, whatever sex pleasure you're experiencing in an attempt to cope with something, is totally healthy and normal. You know, I mean, the issue there for you wasn't porn. It wasn't jerking off because you were sad. It was coping with sadness. And I encourage a lot of my clients who are experiencing any kind of negative emotion or experience that, you know, should they want to tap into their sexuality to cope, that that's totally okay. And I would encourage them. Mm. But there are a lot of people that say, no, that's bad. You shouldn't use sex as a coping mechanism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And ultimately, I think that's sex phobic and really shaming.
Mm. Oh, I love that. Thank you. I don't think it was bad. I just think that any coping mechanism, when you resort to it without pausing, like without the awareness that it's a coping mechanism, can be problematic. And also, I also want to recognize that sometimes that's the best that anyone can do, right? Like, we're coping to feel safe. So I recognize that.
Yeah. But like, what's the difference between doing deep breathing or jerking off? You know, why is jerking off cope in terms of a way to cope with anxiety valued and judged differently than doing a breathing exercise? You know, why, you know, that's, and that's what I really try to get people to think more, to think deeply on is, you know, why are we looking at one behavior and saying that's bad, and then saying, okay, it's okay to binge and watch Netflix for 10 hours, but it's not okay to jerk off for 3.
Well, I don't think, I don't think it's just, God, it's really hard to not ascribe any judgments to this stuff.
Sex, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I also,
and those judgments, they're not based on, you know, this kind of medical fact or anything like that. It's, this is history.
Right. Right, right. There isn't anything inherently problematic about it. And there's nothing medically wrong with it. And it doesn't actually really, it doesn't harm anybody, mm-mm, right? If we're talking about jerking off to pornography, it's like a, for the most part, you know, as long as you're not breaking any laws or doing it in front of a school or some sort of that kind of, you know, errant behavior, it's a harmless activity.
Right. And a lot of the responses that I get is, well, my partner isn't having sex with me because they're spending all day jerking off to porn. And, you know, I would say, okay, well, that sounds like a challenging dynamic for sure. But what's the sex like that you're having? And why aren't you having it? What is it about porn that your partner is turning towards that he's not able to turn towards you in the context of the relationship? It's such a complex issue that we can't say it's the porn. It's this, it's that. It's too complex to focus on some of that.
And that's why your work, and to a certain degree, my work, is extremely valuable.
Yes.
Is to get a third party involved.
Thanks.
And this is sort of touching on what we talked about at the beginning, which is people turning to quick fixes for stuff that is anything but a quick fix.
Yeah. Nobody wants to feel anything.
Well, and that's connected to, you know, me not wanting to feel disappointment and using a coping mechanism.
Which is fine, though. That's the thing, is it's not a problem. You know, so long as it's not like you're like 90 years old. I mean, if you're spending some other time, at least at some point in your life, to reflect upon, you know, the things that you do and why you feel the way you feel, you know, then watch porn. Jerk off and cope with your disappointment.
Yeah. And to go back to this idea that not everything is a quick fix.
No.
And watching and consuming positive content on Instagram and on social media is important. You know, it's like it's a good use of your time. It's not going to solve your deep relational issues.
No, it can't. But I think a lot of people are really encouraging that.
I mean, I get messages on a daily basis where someone's like, hey, can you point me to a piece of content that might, and then they describe this fucking super complex, deep, multi-layered, really unique to them issue. And I was like, well, first of all, no, I don't give advice or coaching in my DMs. Number two, you've just asked me to like give you a piece of content for something that is entirely unique to you, so it doesn't exist. And three, you should probably consider booking an appointment with a trusted third-party professional to help you deal with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's so true. I get those messages too. And it's like, well, first I have 50 questions that I would need to ask you to get a better idea of who you are in the first place, you know, and then maybe we could try to come up with some kind of step-by-step process. But, you know, usually it's not a linear, simplistic response. It's
yeah. Just,
but yeah, I get that all the time. People want to know what the equation is to help find their solution. And for sometimes we can't understand what the equation is until after we've solved it.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. And I'm just eternally grateful to my therapist and the relationship that we've developed over the years, because the work happens in relationship, right? Relationships are great because, sort of like how sex is sex, relationships are great because they highlight some of our challenges and our zones of development and our attachment wounds and all the shit that comes up. Relationships are great for that. And my relationship with my therapist brings up some of that stuff. And, you know, luckily she's uniquely qualified to help me with it as it comes up.
Yeah, I write about this a lot, you know, in terms of all the, like, I follow a lot of therapists, so I'm going to have to, I like them all, but it's just the amount of content about healing is so overwhelming to constantly be bombarded with.
Mm.
And I'm a therapist. Mm. I'm like, that's what I do. But it just gives me such an ick feeling every time I see the word heal this way, heal that way. Healing is this, healing is that. If you don't do this, you won't heal. If you heal, you can have love. You know, it's just like, oh my God, that's not even how it works. It is such a relational experience. It's not like we cut ourselves with a knife and we put a Band-Aid on and then we heal it. That's not the way emotional wounds work. They are often pervasive and persist and are maintained by context and culture. It's so complex. That, you know, understanding our ego is really not going to do that much. That is the Band-Aid, and it doesn't actually heal anything, because some of these wounds, it's not necessarily about healing them. It's more about recovering and managing and tolerating them and developing new ways of engaging with them rather than believing in this kind of final destination called healing or healed.
Or living with them.
Right.
Just being at rest, accepting them and not necessarily having to heal everything. Also, I was talking to my girlfriend about this, about the importance of rest and just being with and not necessarily needing to strive for anything. She's like a successful entrepreneur and she works really hard and she's always wanting to do more. And I said, you know, in the context of our relationship, I would rather that we do less, that we just take an opportunity for us to rest and to be together and not have to work, because life gives us plenty of opportunities for work. You know, we can be triggered by anything. So we don't necessarily need to go and seek out, you know, more things to heal and more wounds to dig deep in and to disinfect. Life will give us plenty of opportunities for us to do that shit as we go along.
Exactly. This is a big thing I work on with couples, you know, in terms of, you know, they always have this laundry list, as I did when I was in my relationship, of things that I want my partner or us to change. Meanwhile, there's also on the other side a list of wonderful things that they share and experience together that get no attention. So you often just do exactly what you were saying you were doing with your partner, which is, you know, giving permission not to have to solve every issue or not to always be in a constant state of healing, you know, not to make ourselves our own personal project, you know, that we are allowed to just be human beings sometimes and not have to be 100% woke or woo-woo or whatever words you want to use constantly. Hmm. It's exhausting. And that's just science fiction.
Yeah, I don't consider myself woke or enlightened. And
I don't even know what that means.
Me neither. I don't know. It's just, I'm not exactly sure, but I want rest in my life. I want rest and I want to be, and I don't always want to do. And I think that's totally fine. We don't always have to be working on ourselves. And no. Some people really have a hard time with this concept.
I know. I was saying, this is when it's, you know, it really becomes about what the experience of being hypervigilant in the face of stress means to somebody, you know, in terms of what they've experienced throughout their entire life's history, story, in terms of creating safety and managing conflict, stress, adversity, trauma, et cetera. And I think it's just, it's reflected in a lot of the content that's created, is that even therapists are really anxious about providing healing, for making things go away. And it's really challenging for us to hold space for some of the enduring effects that accompany all of our lives. It's a totally challenging thing. And I see this with a lot of my clients that come in and feel all of this pressure to live life in a certain way. It's reflected in social media and TV everywhere we go. And this is what reinforces and maintains the anxiety and shame to begin with. So it's a bit of a mind fuck.
Well, I get it. It can be disappointing when you thought that your life would look a certain way and you've realized that it's not. It doesn't look like that. And it can be hard to let go of that ideal that you had for yourself and the relationship that you thought you would have and the career that you thought you would have. You know, I'm 30, almost 38 years old, and I thought I would have two kids by the age of 30, and I've got zero kids. And I can either live in regret and shame for not having fulfilled my purpose or having fulfilled my goals and my dreams, or I can just say like, oh yeah, that was a thing that I wanted and it's not a thing that I got, and that it's going to look a lot different than the way I thought it was going to look. And that leaves room for life to kind of surprise and delight you. And for other people also to show up in the way that makes sense for them, that doesn't necessarily just like, you know, me using people to fulfill my goals and dreams. And I would much prefer to have a lighter touch on life and for me to be constantly surprised and delighted by what life is willing to give me or offer me than for me to shape it the way I want it to be.
Exactly. And you bring up an important point, which is, you know, you had the value of the, you know, this kind of traditional heteronormative value that you will have children and a family, et cetera, by a certain age. And you experience shame and disappointment for not being able to meet, fulfill that idea that became a goal for you, which, you know, I think many of us have. But it comes from a specific place, and then we internalize it, and then we feel disappointed, sad, depressed, shame, whatever, when we don't get there. And I think that we are now doing the same thing culturally when it comes to wellness and recovery and things like that, that we are using clinical language, jargon, advice in the same way that I think our parents once did about the traditional definition for family and life, that being, you know, you get married, you have kids, and you quote unquote grow up. Instead, we've kind of reformulated that as, you know, heal, recover, don't be codependent, don't get into a toxic relationship. You know, that these are now the weapons that was once, you know, traditional family, encouraging for a traditional family. I think that's what's happening, and that we're going to look back on this and say, you know, we were encouraging great information, but doing it in the wrong way.
And so what is the solution to this?
I don't know.
Well, yeah. What is the right? What
have
is
any
the...
solutions? No, I'm kidding.
Wait, give me,
I don't know.
Give it to me in like 140 characters or less.
I can't, you know, I think that the solution or something to just think about is really inserting, integrating, and saturating all of these messages with some more nuance. Mm. So it isn't like, this is the right way to live and recover. This is how you know, that this is something I might invite you to consider.
Oh.
And if you don't, that's okay. You know, not this kind of dogmatic, like, if you do this and you're codependent, or if you say yes when you really mean no, you're betraying yourself. And, you know, these really large stamps of judgment. That's no different than when, you know, in the 50s, when someone would say, if you're a woman, you have to go get married. I mean, it's obviously similar content, but the dogmatic social toxic social values is the same thing, is that when we don't allow for nuance and we stick with this kind of binary, it really creates shame, confusion, and further disconnection, which is the exact opposite of what we're trying to do. So I would say the solution is really to focus on creating more content with nuance, and also more content that contextualizes people's experience in their specific culture that it's happening. We can't talk about mental health without talking about inequality. We can't talk about any sex without talking about gender inequality or sexual orientation, queer sex, you know, that type of stuff. And there's not a lot of that going on.
And I also want to recognize that it's really hard to write a nuanced post on Instagram with the, you know, 2200 character limit. I've written stuff that was not nuanced at all. And someone was like, yeah, well, you know, that's not how, what about these considerations? And I go, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, I have too. I'm not including myself in this, by the way. We all do it. That's like saying I'm above the patriarchy. No, we're all inside of it. Like, we can't be outside of a culture. It's part of us, but it's just something to be conscious of rather than just automatically creating all this stuff that just says, do this, not that, and that's wrong.
And I've actually said, when you say, you know, yes, when you really want to say no, you're betraying yourself. Like, I said those words in my most recent workshop.
Oh, no. Whatever. I mean, look, I would imagine, though, you might be saying that, and it's also couched in complexity and some nuance. But that's the challenge with Instagram, is that there's no further conversation because it is only however many characters. And so we have to speak in generalities sometimes. The problem, it's just a real challenge. I think we all have to collaborate to think how we can overcome, or I don't even know what the word would be, because it's limited. And I think there's not a lot of information on how to use it for people that are users.
And I mean, that's beautiful, right? The idea that maybe the content that you consume on social media can be in addition to and not your sole source of information.
Exactly. I wrote a post recently, and I'm trying to write this article on fast therapy. And that's what I think that the Instagram stuff is. You know, it's kind of like fast food, but it's fast therapy. You know, you get the kind of basics. You can get some insight, but it's not going to be the nutrition you need to get to the place that you actually want to get to.
And it doesn't, it's really hard to integrate.
So hard.
Like the stuff that I integrate with my therapist takes months and months. And usually there's a huge aha moment. I never get that on Instagram. I never like scrolling through a post and just like kind of blown away by the caption. And then I read the copy and I save it. And it's like, never.
A lot of people do. Which isn't wrong, but I think it's just also a yes and type of thing to be doing.
I feel like we could just do this forever. And so to me, this feels like an appropriate place to kind of wrap it up. How do you feel about that?
Sure.
Where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at @yourdiagnonsense or on my website, toddsbarretts.com.
Todd S?
S. Barretts. I wish I didn't put the S in there. It's so annoying when I have to tell people. Yeah. Todd S, like Spencer, my middle name. Barretts, my last .com. But you can also just check me out on Instagram at @yourdiagnonsense.
And just really, sorry, just like a marketing question. Is Todd Barretts available?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I could change it.
Well, no, you can just buy it and then you can point to it.
Yeah.
Like Todd Barretts would point to Todd S. Barretts and vice versa.
I could do that.
So, I don't know if you've got any time, you might want to look into it.
Good luck.
You know, I want to invite you to consider that maybe you could look into, you know, getting toddbarretts.com.
I like your reframe. This is so much nuance and less pressure. Now I'm going to do it. I'm healed.
What does love mean to you?
Oh God, I don't even know. I can't define that. That's a big question. What does love mean to me? Yeah. An exchange of intimacy and vulnerability and reciprocity and mutuality, connectedness, safety.
So all that stuff. You said you didn't know, but then you just gave me like the most beautiful, perfect answer. Cool.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you, John. I had fun. We could do this forever.
Yeah, we definitely could. And we will next time I come to New York.
Yeah, that would be great.
Hey, thanks for spending this hour with Todd and me today, learning about sex and porn. And I want to take this opportunity to invite you to the Lovebird Club, a private Facebook community for people who value love, trust, and intimacy, and who have supported my work in some way in the last year. If you want to join, the best way to do that is to make a monthly contribution to my work by going to thelovedrive.com/join, J-O-I-N, and join us in the Lovebird Club to have conversations and to support each other on the intricacies and the complexities and the muddiness that is sex, love, and dating. We are here every day and there's a beautiful conversation happening. So if that is you, if you are somebody who values trust, love, and intimacy, and you want to connect with people on that, then join us. thelovedrive.com/join and have a beautiful week.